Well, hello, EKN Nation. Welcome to a new edition of the EKN Debrief, episode number 129. It's Wednesday, April the 17th, 2024. And the event that we'll focus on today, the final two rounds, the 2024 Challenge of the Americas, the event taking place this past weekend up at Sonoma Raceway, the karting center up at Sonoma. It was a great cap to this year's Challenge of the Americas. The racing was fantastic. This week's show presented by Soti Racing USA. What brand is known around the world for its innovation and success? It is Soti Kart. The Soti brand returned in full force during the 2023 season thanks to a new exclusive importer, the karting distribution led by industry veteran Terry Germanovich. The French manufacturer Soti Kart is a leader within the karting industry, offering a wide range of products and services. Visit Soti-Racing-USA.com to learn more about the Soti Kart chassis or call 954-634-5111 to become part of the Soti Racing USA network today. Soti Kart, the world leader in the karting industry. All right, David Cole joining me here, folks. Again, my name is Rob Howden. Good to be here for another edition of The Debrief. A fantastic weekend, as I said, up in Sonoma, California. Weather was, let's just say, hot and cold to a certain extent. The event, as I said, taking place April 12th, 13th, 14th, the fifth and sixth rounds of a six-round championship. David, interesting, when we get hit by the numbers, 17 seasons for this championship. We actually had the biggest category ever in 100cc senior. But all told, a great weekend. The weather was pretty solid as well, except for Saturday.
Well, Rob, it's your typical Sonoma Challenge weekend where it's sun, wind, rain, cold, all in with 3 days.
Agreed. Yeah, it's exactly
that's essentially what we had. You know, Friday was a good day for weather. Saturday was wet all day. Thankfully, it wasn't like a downpouring rain like we've had in the past. Yeah. It was a drizzle in the morning and for the most part stayed away until about the, was it the second main event? I think it was, second main event, something like that. I can't remember.
No, you're right.
And then another drizzle of rain, like not even, I would call it almost a mist.
Yeah, it was never a downpour.
It was never really a sprinkle, maybe a little bit of sprinkle, but not much. So to have a wet weekend, it was a good wet weekend because you didn't feel drenched, but the wind obviously there in Sonoma, some reason always picks up super strong and that made it for a colder day, both on Saturday and it got a little bit warmer on Sunday, but then as we were packing up again, the winds picked up.
It did.
Always, as it always does on Sunday.
Yeah, it was cloudy on Sunday. The temps were kind of mid to high 50s. We got mid 60s on Friday, as David said, that rain on Saturday. The big thing's exciting, though, because there was at one point a very light swap to the dry tires. We'll talk about that when we jump into to the actual race report itself. Hitting by the numbers, the first event of the year was the biggest all told. 114 entries at Tucson 1. It dropped to 79 entries on Tucson 2 and then 111 entries for Sonoma over six classes, not eight, nine classes. So although the number not significantly high, still over the six classes. So we had two pretty big classes, David, 27 and 100cc junior, all those drivers on the Vortex power plants, and then 42 in 100cc senior, as I previously mentioned, the single biggest class ever in the 17 years of the challenge.
It was, you know, that 42 is a big number. And I thought we had seen that in previous years, but I believe it was 39 to 40 probably the highest he had seen in the early years of the challenge and the senior Rotax division. He made some jokes about moving guys to Masters so they didn't have to break up the field because of the maximum of 40 drivers at that time. So, yeah. it was a competitive field. A lot of local drivers, I think over 60% were from California. So, of course, a lot of local knowledge there. So it made the fields very tight and up front and throughout the field. Everybody's racing somebody. It was great racing. You know, the craziest thing about it, and we'll talk more in the wrap up about how good of a weekend it was. They got through the opening corners pretty much without any issues.
Agreed. Yeah.
Both through turn one and through tic-tac-toe sections. It was a few situations here and there, but for the most part, a very clean start for all 42 drivers.
Yeah, for sure. I know there was a couple incidents, even the entire weekend. Like I wrapped up the weekend, and Andy Saisman and I were sitting in the tower afterwards in this timing building, and I said I forgot to mention the fact that we didn't have a red flag at all weekend long too. It was a safe weekend, which was good. It was clean, got through it without a red. So all told, a great weekend. 42 and 100cc senior, 27 and 100cc junior. The biggest field on the year as well, David, excuse me, for 60cc cadet, 14 in the cadet class.
Yeah, again, a number of local drivers making their way into the field for the weekend, but good to have that increase. It didn't really fall off too much in T2, but was missing a few drivers and got bumped up to 14 there. In Sonoma. So again, double digits is what you want to see throughout the categories. Unfortunately, weren't able to do that in Master Shifter. We were really hoping we'd get more locals coming out yep. for that category in what was a pretty competitive weekend with a couple drivers there in the mix all weekend long. So that was good. Masters 100cc was at 10, Senior Shifter at 11. So that got bumped back up from what we saw at T2. But still thought we were going to get a little bit more drivers in that category. So, again, still trying to figure out the shifter landscape of where we are in the United States. Agreed. With shifter kart racing.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of club racing that's going on, right? We're getting the big dogs and a couple extra players in there for sure for shifter. And it's gonna keep playing itself out. One last little note before we cap things off. I mentioned 42 carts being drivers being the largest entry ever in the challenge. 58 different drivers taking at least one challenge event at 100cc seniors. So, man, you get everybody out to the all three events, and we're going to have a massive series. So hopefully we'll see some more support throughout 2025 as we get into the next year. And, of course, I know Andy Saisman will go to work now on that, figuring out how that's all going to play out, pick some dates and see what he decides to do in terms of changing things up a little bit.
Also diving into some other numbers that, again, because the independent program that is the challenge, welcoming multiple engine platforms at the program. Quick breakdown, Vortex, only one in the 60cc cadet division, all of them on Vortex in junior division. 16, so roughly just under half on the Vortex in senior. I believe it picked up a win on Sunday. So both IAMI and Vortex picking up wins in the biggest category at the event. Three Vortex engines in 100cc Masters, one Vortex shifter in the Master Shifter category, and then the senior shifter with a majority of TMs, except for the three IAMI engine platforms there. So again, that's, you know, kind of the measuring stick. What are people running? What are, you know, what seems to be the favorite or just what people have essentially is kind of what happens. And again, it's great to see kind of the two engine platforms going up against one another. And as I said, in senior, you got both engines winning. Masters, I believe we had both engines winning. I'll have to double check that as well too.
Indeed. I'll have a look. And again, that's the by the numbers, folks. Both the the IAMI and the Vortex and the other categories, got the TM there in the shifter program. Just a little deeper look in the categories and how they all broke down. All right, after this break, we'll come back. We'll dive into the paddock pass, a couple little things that we picked up while we were at Sonoma. As the winningest Briggs 206 team in the United States in 2023, Precision Performance Karting wants to get you to victory lane in 2024. As the factory team for Coyote Motorsports, Precision Performance Karting won the biggest four cycle races of the year, including Senior Light, Medium, and Heavy at the Cup Karts North America Grand Nationals 7 and winning an iconic Duffy at the IKF Sprint Grand Nationals in Texas. We also traveled north of the border to dominate the Cup Karts Canada finale in Goodwood, beating Canada's best Briggs racers. Our total focus is on winning, and we simply get the job done. Join our team, and we can help you win too. We have several levels of support available for 2024, from full-service arrive-and-drive programs to tent-only options. Our championship-winning PPK-prepared Coyote Zenith carts are ready to power you to great results. Join our team today. To become a PPK driver or to learn more, contact John Seglum at ppkartingfl@gmail.com or check us out online at ppkkartingfl.com. all started in 1994, when former successful kart driver Albino Perlin decided to move his passion for karting from the track to his small workshop. That's when Perlin was born. Fast forward 20 years, and Perlin's passion for the sport led to the company rejoining international competitions as a factory team in WSK and CIK FIA races, with the aim of enhancing the research and development process, immediately achieving notable results around Europe, North America, and Asia, becoming the CIK FIA Asia Pacific KZ champion in the same year. Perlin USA is North America's source for Perlin products, and we run a factory team at all of the major Supercarts USA and Rock Cup USA events. The Perlin chassis lineup for 2021 includes the Invader Shifter, the Le Mans Tag single-speed chassis for junior and senior classes, and the 28mm mini kart for the cadet classes. Perlin has been winning races all over the world, and it's on top of the podium in the USA as well, with drivers like Kai Sorensen, Mateus Orjuela, and Alessandro De Tullio. Get on the chassis that's winning. Drive a Perlin. For more information, head to PerlinUSA.com. A leading name in high-performance engines is D2 Motors. Owned and operated by karting champion Danilo Ramalho, D2 Motors can power you to the top of the podium. D2 Motors has been servicing karters in North America since 2019 and is opening its doors to teams and drivers across the national and local racing circuits. D2 Motors is offering access to superior engine technology designed to elevate performance on the track. There is no engine platform that D2 Motors has not excelled at. They are a leading Rotax service center, along with developing championship-winning power for the IAMI and ROC brands. If you are seeking a competitive edge and reliability, partner with D2 Motors today. Call 954-895-6334 or visit D2 Motors Official on social media. D2 Motors, come and join the power with us.
Welcome back to episode 129 of the EKN Debrief. Myself, Rob Howden, and David Cole, essentially giving you the race report of what happened in the final two rounds of the Challenge of the Americas, the Championship Sunday events were wild, of course. Into the paddock pass right now. Before we jump right into the race report, we've got some little notes from the weekend itself. And this weekend's paddock pass brought to you by Skip Barber Racing School. Are you looking for the next step in racing? Go from karts to cars with the Skip Barber Racing School. Skip Barber alumni are champions in every motorsports series, including Formula One, NASCAR, IMSA, and IndyCar. Get behind the wheel of a Skip Barber Formula 4 car featuring 160 horsepower turbocharged engine. Our highly structured and competitive Skip Barber Formula Race Series is the perfect platform to start your racing career so you can fulfill your dream of becoming a champion. With equalized race cars and a focus on driver development, your driving skills will determine if you end up in victory lane. Learn more about the Skip Barber Racing School at skipbarber.com or call 866-932-1949. All right, David, first things first, and I don't know if I just hadn't picked up on it. I think there was a couple articles about it, some social media posts. I just didn't see them. I didn't pick them up. When you and I rolled in there for the first time on Thursday afternoon, I was like, man, they've done some work here. And yeah, a new look for Sonoma for sure.
Yeah, I think you're just old and forgot that that was the talk when we were there last year.
That's a possibility.
Yeah. As soon as we left the challenge of last year, it went right into remodeling mode. It was actually in process, I believe, as we were there last year. I think they had already taken out the bathrooms that were there, the trailer style bathrooms. So that was gone. But a whole new look for the paddock area for the Sonoma Raceway karting circuit, along with the tower. Got rid of the old kart shop that was there, so that is no longer there. So replace that with a nice deck and podium area. That was good to see. It was a great place to host the podiums there at the, Sunday morning when we had the Saturday podiums, which were delayed, and then the championship and Sunday podiums on Sunday afternoon. So that was good. And then, of course, a complete repave of the paddock area itself. So no tents are allowed to be staked into the ground. Everybody using either the concrete barriers or water jugs to hold tents down. So a new look. It's certainly always, as we always talk about, it has one of the most picturesque views in the sport of karting. And now you add the landscaping, the complete paving, it makes it, and of course the scoring tower making a lot, looking a lot nicer.
Yeah.
Certainly upgrades the amenities at that facility.
Yeah. It looked really good for sure. No doubt about that. And again, that one front row that used to be the whole walking row for the big teams would be on the front row. It's now all landscaped up and nice. So it's
yeah,
pretty good.
I think that's the only downside. It did take away good paddock space right along the pit lane there.
Yep.
So I think that was the only negative from it. But other than that, yeah, it was. It's great to see again. The visual aspect of things, it certainly goes a long way. Yeah, it might cost you in the long run, but it certainly helps.
One of the other big notes for the paddock pass for this past weekend's event, the challenge at Sonoma, was the return of the GFC. Karting shifter contingent. They were there for round number one in Tucson. Round number two, they were in Florida testing for the upcoming SCUSA race that was taking place at Orlando, so they weren't there. So we plumped things back up again, bringing back in Kyle Wick and Jacob Gulick, Hunter Pickett. There was the whole crew was back again, the top dogs in the shifter senior category.
Yeah, one of the things I noted in that quick little write-up was Hunter Pickett had won five of the last six challenge races in the shifter kart division there at Sonoma. So it was good. It was kind of going in. It was interesting to see, okay, could he add to that? Obviously, Jacob Gulick and Kyle Wick were going to have a little something to say about that. But interesting to see over the past three events that he had won five of the last six races.
That's so pretty impressive.
Pretty stout number. For the two-time champion.
Well, the other things I kind of thought was interesting is, you know, I was at NOLA Motorsports Park the week before and there for the USF Pro Championships event, and USF Juniors was on track. And I was able to call a race in USF Juniors, the debut for Christian Cameron, who is a multi-time Rock Sonoma and former Challenge of the Americas 100cc junior champion. Christian making the move into USF Juniors this year, just 14 years of age. Going to do a little bit of karting here and there, but primarily focus on the juniors car. But great to see him jump right back, you know, out of the juniors cart, right into the cart with the karting collective on a Sody cart, and he was in the hunt all weekend long.
Yeah, going to the home track certainly will help with that when you got the competitive fields that we do have at the challenge. So home track knowledge certainly helped with Cameron, but it is tough to make that car to kart transition because you get so focused in on what you have to do in a car because you have so limited time and it's very intensive and focused driving cars that it's sometimes tough for people to go back. But I think the young age drivers have that ability to make that transition back and forth. So great to see Cameron, a former champion, I believe the 2022 junior champion at the challenge. So it's great to see him back.
All right, let's jump in another quick break. When we come back, it's time to start working our way through the sixth class race report. We'll come back and dive into senior shifter and 100cc senior. Left without a mechanic or a crew to help you at the kart track or in the garage? Kart Lift Kart Stands is your solution. The company, founded in 2003, is now owned and operated by Ted Fashing out of Kokato, Minnesota. And Ted has decades of knowledge and experience with fabrication. Kartlift takes pride in both our quality and our personal customer service that we provide on the phone or at the track. Kartlift kart stands can be found at racetracks all over the country. If you race alone, or if you're a parent with a cadet or junior driver, let our one-man winch lift make your race days easier. Position the hooks under the rear bumper, push the button, and your kart is raised into position and you're ready to go. We also have Kartlift stackers for storing two karts at once, traditional kart stands, single and double upright storage stands, tire changers, and skid plate kits. Race teams and shops can contact us about our state-of-the-art chassis straightening table. If you have an idea for a custom stand, Kartlift can build it for you. All products from Kartlift are made in the USA. Kartlift kart stands are available at many kart shops around the country, or you can order online at kartlift.com. For more information, give us a call at 877-777-8020. That's 877-777-8020. Get a kart lift today. Prepare for the adrenaline with the best handcrafted materials in karting today. That is the guarantee that Croc Promotion Chassis provides to you,
available here in the U.S. by Croc Promotion USA. Owned by karting industry veteran Ivan Bodnar, Croc Promotion USA is the importer for the European manufactured brand that has been making history since 2017. Croc Promotion is riding into 2024, celebrating two victories in the IAMI Warrior Final with Collie Atkins in senior and Harry Bartle in junior competition. That same chassis for senior and junior drivers is available here from Croc Promotion USA, along with their KZ shifter kart model, 28mm Cadet, kid kart chassis, and the four-cycle version for the North American market. Croc Promotion USA has dealers reaching the West Coast, Texas region, and the Midwest, and is looking to add to its network in 2024. Visit crocpromotion.us to learn more about the chassis brand and to become our newest dealer. Croc Promotion, born to ride, ride to live. History, success, family. Those are the three words that can describe Comet Kart Sales, one of the longest tenured karting businesses in the United States. The family-owned operation located just outside of Indianapolis has provided karts, parts, and services for thousands of racers in the near six decades of business. Their online store features everything you need, continually adding new parts to their product line. From full karting packages, new engines, spare or replacement parts, and safety gear, find it all at CometKartSales.com. Their Comet Racing Engine service has won multiple major events and championships over decades of karting and continues to offer the best trackside service in the industry, specializing in IAMI X30, IAMI Swift, and other two-cycle power plants. Make sure to head to CometKartSales.com or call them at 317-462-3413 to be part of the Comet Kart Sales family today. Back at it here, episode 129 of our EKN debrief. Again, talking about the final weekend of this year's Challenge of the Americas out at Sonoma Raceway Karting Center. We'll dive into the race report right now. Six categories on the docket last weekend. This year, this shows up a race report brought to you by Margay Racing. Check out Margay Racing's Spec Ignite class and their Arrive and Drive packages. Nothing matches the affordability and competitive level of the Ignite program. It's where the best driver wins over the best equipment. Bring your safety gear and Margay will take care of the rest. This year's Ignite Majors include the Quincy Grand Prix, USAC Karting Elkhart Riverwalk Grand Prix, and the Rock Island Grand Prix on Labor Day weekend. The Midwest-based Ignite Challenge Series will hit six different tracks in 2024, and be sure to find a club running an Ignite class in your part of the country this season. For more information, please visit ignitekarting.com today. Get off the couch and into a race seat. All right, David, let's jump into the race report now, brought to you by Margay Racing. Senior Shifter, presented by Sweet Tech Racing Engines. Here's the headline. Wick doubles up as Avancino claims title.
Why don't you have some of that tea over there?
I'm going to grab it right now.
Yeah, it was a near sweep on the weekend for Kyle Wick, our EKN driver ranking number one driver. Shut your mic off. Come on now. I'm trying to talk here.
Hacking up a lung over here.
I know.
I thought I pressed mute, but I didn't.
Nope. Kyle Wick nearly pulling off the sweep on the weekend. Again, our EKN driver rankings, number one driver in 2023, and continues to be that after the first edition of our driver rankings in 2024. Wick was the wet weather master, as we expected to see, except for in the pre-final. Yeah. Where he spun out twice. Not characteristic, though. He said just got into tic-tac-toe a little bit strangely and spun. Just hit the wet, I believe there was a river kind of, or little water running through the racetrack at that time. And just because they were on dry tires.
They were on dry. I was just saying that was the wet day, but yes. You'll hear this later, folks. It changed during the Master Shifter, which was the class just before them. That's when we went from wets to dries. And there was still a lot of water down in tic-tac-toe.
Tic-tac-toe, I believe going into one as well, too, there was a good little river that was making the track a little bit damp there, too. So, but everywhere else was dry. So it forced everybody to dry tires. So, Wick spun out twice. I believe he was leading the first time and then was trying to get around Gulick and then spun again. So Gulick was able to score the pre-final victory. Unfortunately for him in the main event, Gulick was spun on lap two. So that hampered his race in that in the main event. That allowed Wick to essentially take over and run away with the victory, going out to a 9-second advantage on wet weather tires because it was, again, drizzling at that time for the main event. Keon Tandon was
there.
Vivek was there. Keon Tandon was the driver in second as a charging Jakob Gulick, as you said on the broadcast, an angry Gulick,
man,
was driving his way up through the field after the spin and got up to the third position, just short of Tandon there in the second spot. Rounding out the top five was championship contender Michael Avancino and fellow Ron White Racing driver David Williams, as they finished fourth and fifth. So Avancino getting a little bit more points than Williams heading into the final day for the championship.
Yeah, and that spin for Gulick, he was in the middle of a fight early with Tandon and Avancino, and they came out of turn number 11, the right-hand hairpin, and they were kind of going through the kink, right, over to turn 13, the final corner. And Gulick was trying to make that move to the inside and was kind of along the inside and just, I think, touched the curbing a little bit, and it just did this quick, lazy spin around 360, and he was kind of able to get it going again and keep rolling, but lost a lot of spots and came roaring back forward, putting on a show for sure. But yeah, it was just a quick spin there coming through the kink turn number 12, and that's all it takes to go around for sure. And as you said, a big win for Wick when that happened, because they were battling kind of for second back there, 9.5 seconds for him. Keon Tandon did get the hard charger. He was actually the only driver making big moves, to be honest. Started seventh and got himself up into second all told. So it was a good run for Tandon for sure to cap off the day. Wick with his first win on the weekend. But David, much different on Sunday. Yes, Wick qualified P1. He won the pre-final. But Michael Avancino was an absolute beast for the – almost held him off the entire race.
Yeah, it was a hole shot that got Avancino into the lead. Wick got a little bit of a stumble off the line. Avancino took it from the outside of the front row and took over the lead.
Yeah.
And they essentially walked away from the rest of the field. Gulick had a retirement with mechanical, I believe, gearbox on the opening lap,
yeah,
if not opening lap two.
No, so opening lap, you're right. Didn't get a lap in. Yeah.
So that essentially made it a two-driver fight up front, as it was a battle with the veterans for P3 behind him. We'll talk about that later. But Avancino, as you said, led every lap with Wick right on his bumper. They ran very similar lap times. Wick kind of looked a couple times but didn't make a move, and essentially waited until the final lap heading into tic-tac-toe, which Rob, you said was probably one of the most amazing moves you had seen at that racetrack.
Yes, at that track for sure. Gary Carlton called it one of the top 10 moves he's ever seen after the race itself. So essentially they came down into turn number one, and it looked like Avancino got through one cleanly. And it looks like he was going to get through tic-tac-toe cleanly too, right? He dove into the first corner, the right-hander. And then I talked to Wick later, and he said that they just took a bit of a different angle. Avancino was kind of a little bit more tentative through there and took a wider angle through the three, because the tic-tac-toe is obviously turn two, three, and four. Through the left-hander, he just took a little bit, you know, a little bit more a wide entry into it, and Wick just like literally came through, just went straight to the apex and caught everybody off guard, got to the inside, definitely caught Avancino off guard, passed him on the inside, the second corner of tic-tac-toe, and then came out with the race lead. Absolutely impressive, all told in the end. And the lead was big at the end too, and what an excellent overtake.
It was, you know, it was a great move by Wick to be able to secure the top spot. And Avancino wasn't able to secure a move back or retaliate back on him. The advantage was only was 3.2 seconds after the checker flag. That is because a penalty for cutting the track to Avancino.
Yep.
At the start, after they got through turn one, they went through tic-tac-toe, and Wick actually kind of got alongside Avancino, and Avancino decided to take evasive action to try and not make contact. And officials deemed that as cutting the racetrack, so he was given a 3-second penalty. Fortunately, they were far enough ahead of the rest of the pack that he still retained the second position.
Indeed. Pickett, we can talk about that next battle. Hunter Pickett ended up finishing in third, Alan Sciuto fourth, and Anthony Freese in fifth. But there was actually a driver in there that got DQ'd. David, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Keon Tandon was the driver that came across the line in the fourth spot. sat on the scales for probably about 5 minutes trying to get the cart and himself to reach that 400 minimum weight that is implemented. Unfortunately, it continued to stay at 399 and thus was disqualified from the race.
Yeah, Pickett coming home third. That moves Alan Shudo up into fifth and Freeze up into the sixth spot. Pickett was the hard charger, sixth spot up into third. We'll talk about here in the race report, because it was a focus throughout the entire weekend, being Championship Sunday as well, was the battle for the championships. And coming into the event, Michael Avancino, David Williams, and Keon Tannen all had a chance to win the championship. It ended up being Avancino, David. He had a tremendous weekend, fourth on the opening race and second in race number two. He comes away with the championship for Ron White Racing and CRG.
Yeah, and Wick only racing four rounds, but three of them victories, and I believe a runner-up in his other, put him second in the championship by 37 points back. David Williams, again, in his rookie shifter cart season, finishing in the third spot, a pre-final DNF didn't help on Sunday, and so he only finished in seventh in the main event. So 71 points back, but still a pretty solid season, I think, for David Williams under the Ron White Racing CRG tent. Pretty much kept Avancino on his game. Yeah. They were kind of the two drivers to watch in round two and round three and four at Tucson too. And so good to see Williams again, another driver making his way into the shifter cart ranks. So hopefully we'll see more David Williams in 2024.
Yeah, super impressive. I would agree with you on that. Let's go to 100cc Senior, brought to you by Forward Direction Motorsports. Here is the headline: Hand and Persing split as Martin earns championship.
Well, as we said, Saturday was wet, and so was qualifying for the 100cc division along with the pre-final. But it was Jack Doyle picking up the fast time and qualifying with a 102.276. So, again, a pretty wet racetrack for qualifying, which saw Chase Hand, who decided to race karts this weekend. They had their cars program down in Irwindale get rained out or called early.
Yep.
So they were able to stay home and head out to Sonoma for practice on Friday and race for the weekend. And he was qualified second and was the driver to beat in the pre-final, got away to a pretty big advantage. And then in the main event, he was joined up front by Josh Fine and Kane Martin, the championship contenders. So two outliers and a championship driver. So you knew Kane was kind of making sure he didn't make a mistake or didn't really screw things up for him in the championship, but still was in the hunt, I think.
Yeah.
With Fine and Hand going kind of back and forth throughout the race, Martin was making himself known, was right there waiting for his opportunity, but again, not really forcing anything too hard, but his great racing in the wet weather conditions between all three drivers. In the end, however, Chase Hand was able to secure the lead, in the final moments of the race and hold on to score his first challenge victory of the 2024 season, with Josh Fine on his Cosmic in second, and then Kane Martin in the third position.
Yeah, it was a great over-under at turn number 11 for Hand to take that lead back. Oliver Calvo, we talked about him in the outlap coming into the event for the first time in 2024. Oliver was kind of part of the conversation throughout the weekend. He ends up in fourth spot. Keegan Kaminsky, one of the other championship contenders, was right there as well. He was P5, so it would come down to Kane Martin and Keegan Kaminsky on Sunday. Hard charger on Saturday, though, Isaac Gutierrez up 24 positions. The GFC driver started all the way back in 40th and drove his way up to 16th, so a strong run for him. We even had a better advancement on Sunday, but great job there for Gutierrez up 24. He started at the tail of the field like that and passed that many carts coming up. That's going to be make for a fun day for sure. Obviously, Hand, very happy, right? He was like, yep, I'm good. This is going to be good. I'm going to win this whole weekend. Came out of the gate, qualified pole again on Sunday, David, but there was a lot of drivers kind of dialed things up in the dry conditions.
Yeah, the dry conditions made things a little bit interesting because none of them were on it on Saturday, so you had to go off kind of base what you were doing. Yep. Friday, different track conditions, certainly for sure on Sunday compared to Friday, and Ryan Persing just seemed to find the sweet spot in the pre-final, jumped up into the lead and was kind of walked away from it. And then same thing in the main event, just used that pole position, kept it consistent lap after lap and challenging for second behind him, allowed him to kind of just continue to inch away and inch away lap after lap. But Persing was able to kind of break that that superhero on Friday streak where he's been fastest on Friday every weekend.
Yep.
And be able to secure that first challenge victory, winning by over a second in the main event.
Hopefully he was able to get some Hooters for dinner too, right?
Yes. I was expecting to see a photo, but nothing on social media. So maybe they kept it private.
That's what he said post-race interview. And I asked him how he was going to celebrate the big victory, his first national win. He said they were going to Hooters. Oliver Calvo was able to pull away as well. There was a fantastic battle. Essentially, I want to say second back to about eighth or ninth. Calvo got to the front of that group and then pulled away. So he was kind of by himself there. But David, that fight at the end was wild because Cade Martin and Keegan Kaminsky were both in the middle of the fight. Now, even though they were like, it was third back to ninth or third back to eighth, it didn't really matter if Martin was third or he was eighth. It wasn't going to matter championship-wise. The gap was enough for Cade Martin. But Keegan Kaminsky was truly the driver to watch, I think, at that point over the last couple of laps, David. He literally worked his way up to third on the final lap, and then things got a little ugly on the final circuit, and he got kind of shoveled out, and then he was just on the outside looking in for the rest of the lap.
Yeah, Kaminsky had to start back in the 15th spot, so it was kind of what was he going to do, because he had to get up there and get ahead of Martin. And yeah, there were some scenarios where it could have happened, but Martin needed to either drop out of that top 10 or something other than that happen. And so it was still kind of interesting watching that because, again, any positions that Kaminsky could put between him and Martin, it was good. And I believe as they started that last lap, Kaminsky got up into the third spot, had Han behind him. I was thinking, okay, Han's going to work with him.
That's right.
And let him go. Well, Han had other reasonings. He wanted the podium himself. And he took the position. And when he did, it essentially allowed the rest of the field to kind of work by Kaminsky as he got kind of shuffled back, ending up into the seventh position when they crossed the line. But he had fast lap of the race, so it was still a good drive for him. Unfortunately, not the way he wanted to end. So Han took the third spot. Chris Martin, our round three winner, in the fourth position. And then Dustin Salaverio, another Sody cart into the top five.
Yeah, and again, a good run for Martin, who was in that seven cart battle there from third on back. Again, coming home to P4 with, as you said, Kaminsky in seventh, good enough for him to win the championship. But the hard charger on that one, I mentioned that Isaac Gutierrez was up 24 spots on Saturday. Colby Romero on the ITAL course, the team was quick. The ITAL course guys were fast the entire weekend. He started 40th. He got up to 11th, so even a little better than Gutierrez on Saturday, almost into the top 10 for Romero. 29-spot improvement in the drive. Incredibly impressive for him to work his way forward, as we said. In the end, Cade Martin comes away with a championship by just 22 markers over Kaminsky, and Ryan Persing with that big victory, David, on Sunday, jumping up into third, 112 points back.
Yeah, again, Cade Martin, not a winner on the six rounds in the challenge. So again, consistency rules and prevails in this championship battle where Kaminsky won twice on the year. So again, every point matters, and we'll get into some very tight championships later. Yeah. But again, in all the categories, every point matters. Pre-final, final, even qualifying, getting that bonus points for being quickest in qualifying. So great. Congrats to Cade Martin on his first challenge championship.
Indeed. We get back after this quick break. We'll look at 100cc junior and 60cc cadet. Is IndyCar your dream? If it is, for 2024 and beyond, the path from karting to IndyCar has gotten even clearer. It's time to look into the new USF Juniors program and the Tatis JR23. As a first step of the USF Pro Championships presented by Continental Tires, the USF Junior Series will feature a 6-event, 13-race schedule to train racers for the move into the USF 2000 Championship presented by Continental Tires. Three of the events in 2024 will run alongside IndyCar at Mid-Ohio, Road America, and Portland. The champion will win a scholarship worth over $263,000, and there's a total prize fund that will exceed $330,000. The series utilizes the state-of-the-art Tatis JR23 race car, which is a development version of the USF 22 used in USF 2000. It's the ideal entry point for career-minded karters moving in to the car racing ladder. Safety is always front and center in the minds of the series promoters,
and the new USF Juniors car also features the Halo, and races are supported by members of the AMR IndyCar Safety Team. If IndyCar is your goal, USF Juniors is the starting line. For more information, visit www.usfjuniors.com and follow USF Juniors on social media. In this day and age, if you need something for your karting program, it's just one mouse click away. One of the leading online stores in the sport of karting is TSRacing.com. The Florida-based company has been serving the karting community for decades. TS Racing is one of the few kart shops with technical expertise in all divisions of karting. TS Racing's online superstore features a full range of the products you need to start karting today, or to restock your garage or trailer for the racing season. TS Racing is also the official distributor for Vega tires. For dirt, road racing, sprint, and the most popular four-cycle tire with Cup Karts North America, a wide range of Vega compounds and sizes are available for your karting needs. Head over to tsracing.com today or call 352-793-9600 to learn more about the Vega tire brand or the many products that they have at TS Racing. Made in the USA. It's not just a statement, it's the mission at Factory Karts of America. Led by four-time Supernats champion Billy Musgrave, Factory Karts manufactures their frames completely in-house at the Riverside, California facility. Built and designed from the ground up specifically for the American karting market, Factory Karts brings new innovations and solutions that are long overdue. Factory Karts bring together the highest quality materials to produce a high-performance, long-lasting kart that has been designed and perfected from 3 years of development, with a focus for a big push across North America in 2023. No other karting manufacturer stands behind its product like Factory Karts does, providing a 2-year warranty on all their frames. Do you remember when American made meant innovative, original, stronger, faster, and just plain better? Well, American made is back. Contact Factory Karts today to join the American made movement. Learn more by visiting factorykarts.com or email Billy anytime at info@factorykarts.com. Welcome back to the EKN Radio Network and our 129th edition of The Debrief. Right now, breaking down the final rounds of the Challenge of the Americas for 2024. My name is Rob Howden, joined by David Cole. We're working our way through the race report brought to you by Margay Racing. 100cc Junior presented by Nash Motorsports will be next up. And here's the headline. Sarfati takes title with Rantala and Brown earning wins.
Again, the Saturday conditions wet to begin the day, and it was Peyton Westcott, fresh off a trip to Europe at the Champions of the Future program that they have going over there. She was able to secure the top qualifier in the session. That was after Turner Brown had posted fast lap, but lost his fast time due to losing his GoPro camera. So that was a penalty for him. So he actually started further back, got himself up into the battle for the lead, but eventually had to pull off because he lost a rear bumper. So not a great start to the weekend for Turner Brown, but Peyton Westcott took advantage of both to set to be the top qualifier and win the pre-final to start the main event from the pole position. As the drivers were taking the track, this is the category where we saw the weather conditions change.
It
was drying and dried up to that point. So we had 60cc cadet run their main event along with the both shifter categories, essentially in dry conditions. So everybody on the grid was on dry tires. And as they were on their warm-up lap, that's when the clouds kind of opened up with a mist, a little sprinkle. Again, nothing crazy, no crazy rain, but just enough to make the track damp. And it was an exciting 20 laps to watch these drivers take to the track under interesting conditions.
I loved it.
And dry tires. And it was, I think the comment was these drivers in these 20 laps learned a lot more than they could in any other test session they could ever do.
Yeah.
It was fun to watch. There was a lot of changing for position. A lot of drivers ended up being Hudson Sharp that jumped out to the lead and kind of took to the wet track quicker than everybody else. And it took a little bit for everybody to get into the motion of everything.
That's it.
But Sharp was out to a pretty solid lead until Alex Rantala was able to run him down along with Nix Eggleston. So those two drivers were able to run down Sharp, take over the top spot. And then Eggleston took over the lead after taking the white flag. Eggleston was able to hold on through the final lap to cross the line as the provisional winner. Unfortunately for Eggleston, he was penalized three times for contact in the race, and that essentially dropped him all the way down to the seventh position, but in turn provided Alex Rantala his first challenge victory as he was classified the winner on the day.
Indeed, Turner Brown coming back from the issue he had in the pre-final. He drives his way up to the second spot. Christian Cameron, not surprisingly, the local driver with that knowledge of the track in the wet. He ends up finishing in third on the podium. Hudson Sharp, who had led early, finishing in fourth. And Jackson Young, a good run as well, up into the top five. But as you said, David, I'll just comment here. It was really exciting watching the drivers over those first couple of laps searching for the grip around the track, right? Where can I be there? We're using the outside line. They always say rain is the great equalizer, right? It's not about power. It's more about how you use your right foot. Get rolling on that throttle. And I was just super impressed with that the drivers were able to really, you know, kind of adapt to the changing conditions, because it wasn't pouring. It wasn't like everybody was just driving off the racetrack. It wasn't dangerous at all. Everybody slowed down by, 10 seconds on track. So it was just fun to watch them kind of all figure it out. And I was super impressed. And again, we talked about Turner Brown coming from the back of the pack after the issue with the rear bumper in the pre-final. He ends up getting the hard charger, not surprisingly. 22 spots up, started all the way back in 24th at the tail of the field and worked his way all the way up to third on the racetrack. And then with the penalty laid down to Eggleston, he ends up in second. All told, a really good run for Brown, and then turned around and got it rolling again on Sunday. David qualified on pole and ended up winning the pre-final as well.
Yeah, real quick, just to wrap up Saturday. Yep. So wet track on dry tires was about 2 seconds off a wet track and rain tires. So yeah, interesting little tidbit there.
But yeah, no doubt.
I think I want to say the track was
more.
Well, I think the track was a little bit more. I think it was wetter than in the morning than what it was for them. Possibly, I don't know. It's hard. Kind of hard to judge.
Like you said, Dave, we said earlier, it never really rained hard, right? It was kind of a light mist and then a little bit of a sprinkle kind of a thing.
I didn't even have to put a cover on my camera. So that tells you how little of rain came down, but made it just wet enough. Turner Brown, the driver, the local driver from Sonoma, was able to set fast time in qualifying and win the pre-final. And then in the main event, Brown led the first half of the race. That was until Christian Cameron, Nico Cerfati were able to come up and fight for the top spot throughout the second half of the race. Eventually, Brown was able to fight his way back up into the lead by the end of lap 18. And then from there, held off a late charge by Eric Doan in the closing laps and all the way to the checkered flag, as it was only 17 thousandths of a second at the line, with Turner Brown picking up his first challenge victory over Eric Doan.
Yeah, Doan was amazing. He was back at seventh at one point early in that race and just kind of dug in. He was the fastest guy, was coming forward, made great passes, was able to get out, and then right up onto Brown, like you said. First he reeled in Sarfati, then he almost went by Brown as well. Great run for Eric. 17 thousandths of a second, as you said, at the line. Nico Cerfati finishing in third, the points he needed to win the championship over Nix Eggleston, who was fifth. Christian Cameron, fourth. The hard charger in the second race on Championship Sunday, Archer Eversman for Forward Direction Motorsports on the Pontano, started 23rd, up 10 spots into 13th. Cerfati, though, David, comes away with a big championship.
Yeah, big championship for him to finish out the challenge by 35 points over Nix Eggleston, last year's champion. So coming up just short to go back-to-back for the first time since and then Peyton Westcott in the third spot, 106 points back. I don't believe it was Tristan Murphy. I can't remember.
You'll figure it out. I will say this. We kind of got it wrong a little bit when I was calling it out, but once we did figure it out, it actually was GFC winning the first two championships on the day as well. We're going to jump into 100 to 60cc Cadet. We'll talk about it. But GFC.
Tristan Young. That's the name.
Tristan Young. There you go. There you go. You're working hard to get back into the results there, weren't you?
I was.
Good man. We'll go to 60cc Cadet, presented by the Karting Collective. Here's the headline. Ramirez and Tarango earn first as Wagner squeaks through for second straight championship.
It was a different Ramirez, not the Daniel Ramirez we saw in Tucson 2 that picked up a victory, but Nathan Ramirez. Interesting enough, not related, I don't believe, both running under the Kart Nick operation, but both on separate carts. Daniel Ramirez on Nitro Kart and Nick Ramirez on the Parolin. Well, it was Daniel Ramirez that was a driver to beat early on the day, picking up fast time and qualifying and then winning the pre-final. And then, as we said, the main event for 60cc Cadet was under dry conditions. So changed the conditions for these drivers going out on the dry track for the first time on the day. Kaysen Hodge, a local driver who used to race for Speed Sense, now over at the Karting Collective on the SodiKart brand, he jumped out to the lead, was essentially looked to be the driver to beat. That was until lap traffic got into his way and made contact with the lap cart on the front stretch. A very scary situation because almost hitting the flag stand area as well. But luckily, Kaysen was able to continue on. But that, unfortunately, the contact dropped him down to the fourth spot, which allowed Nathan Ramirez to take over to the lead. Essentially go on from there to drive away to the win, but was challenged late in the race by Daniel Ramirez, the double winner from Tucson 2, as they fought to the line, and it was Nathan Ramirez picking up the victory over Daniel by 54 thousandths of a second.
Yeah, point leader coming in, Drew Jensen coming home into the third spot, to Kaysen Hodge in fourth, and Paxton Romero rounding out the top five in that one. The hard charger was Neva Desra, up five spots, started 14th, worked his way up into the top 10, finishing in ninth. And the Ramirez trade continued. We saw a lot of guys do this, be good on Saturday and kind of come out of the gate with momentum on Sunday. Ramirez did that as well. Nathan qualified on the pole position for Championship Sunday.
Yeah, 59.244 put him on the pole position, but it was Drew Jensen that came away with the provisional, pre-final victory pre-final victory, but a penalty for lane violation at the start, costing him 2 seconds, which essentially dropped him all the way down to the fourth spot. So that's about 4 points losing there, plus giving Braden Wagner, his championship rival, an extra point.
Yep.
So essentially a 5-point swing in the way the championship would go into the main event, but we did not know that going into the main event, or at least I did not know that. The main event, so again, all eyes were kind of on Jensen, Wagner, and they actually were the drivers at the front of the field in the main event, which you could probably get into a little bit more better than I can.
Well, the one thing is the kind of outlier in the championship was Tarango, Lucas Tarango, mm-hmm. right? He was coming in P3, thought he had an outside shot at it, right? But stepped things up on Sunday in a big way. Jensen and Wagner were battling back and forth. They kept scrapping there in the late in the run. Tarango reeled them in, as drivers often do when they start racing up front. He caught them right essentially coming down the front straightaway. Last lap through turn one, and he's able to get a better run because they kind of went, I think Braden went inside Drew, and Tarango does a full over under coming out of one. He drag races him down, takes the lead in tic-tac-toe, ends up going on to the victory. And again, we were a little messed up in terms of we had one result wrong, so we were calling it for Jensen for the championship. He ends up finishing in third. Wagner finishes second on the podium. Tarango gets the win. Daniel Ramirez in fourth, Nathan Ramirez in fifth. But David, in the end, let's talk about how it plays out. We make the adjustment based on, double checking the results we had. It was 3 points between the top three drivers.
It was, the way it finally ended, it ended up being 3 points between the three drivers at the top of the championship. Crazy. Because Tarango got moved up into second in that pre-final, and then with the victory in the main event, along with fast time, gave him another 5 points there. So brought him in even closer. So not quite into the top spot or second, But Wagner thus named the champion, winning by 2 points over Drew Jensen. And so probably one of the tighter championships we've seen in challenge. And again, it's just the way the challenge format works. We typically see this in the sixth round count best of five program that they do have. It's interesting how all of this works out, how close it can be. Because again, Tarango only winning this round, Wagner winning two rounds in the opening Tucson weekend, Jensen not winning a round at all, but still right there in the championship hunt. Yep. So a great six rounds of racing for this category, which I don't know why, if you're racing cadet on the western part of the country, why you wouldn't be at the challenge, because these races were probably some of the best we had season long, all six rounds.
100% agree with you. The racing was tremendous. Wagner ends up winning the championship over Jensen by 2 points and over Tarango by three. So super close in the category, and it was the biggest field of cadets that the challenge had to in all the three of the events. So great job for everybody coming out for that. And again, hopefully momentum will roll into 2025. Another break, folks. When we get back, we'll continue with the race report presented by Margay Racing. We'll wrap things up with 100cc Masters and Masters Shifter.
The new face of competitive karting in the Pacific Northwest region is RaceLab. The full-service karting operation is located at the state-of-the-art Kartplex facility in Oliver, British Columbia, Canada, providing everything you need to hit the track or put yourself in a successful driver development program. RaceLab is the official North American distributor for the TB Kart chassis brand, providing the full range of models from kid kart to shifter kart. Villeneuve Racing Karts is their flagship product, available only through RaceLab. The brand carries the name of Formula One champion and Indianapolis 500 winner Jacques Villeneuve, with each model produced by TB Kart. Kartplex, the home of RaceLab, is situated on the grounds of the Area 27 Motorsports Park. From full arrive and drive TB kart rentals to leagues and competition karting, the facility provides a new home to developing the future stars of motorsports, all beginning at Kartplex with RaceLab. Follow RaceLab on social media on Facebook and Instagram, or load up their website at www.theracelab.ca to learn more about TB kart and Villeneuve Racing Karts. RaceLab. Race with us, win with us. Made in the USA. That's exactly what you get from Precision Karting Technologies. Based in Detroit, Michigan, PKT brings over 35 years of manufacturing experience to the sport of karting. Their passion for the sport began focusing around the kid kart platform and has expanded every year with hundreds of products designed to put you on the podium. Precision Karting Technologies is known around North America for their successful line of axles available in all age groups. PKT manufactures a number of engine products for Comer, IAMI, Rock, Rotax, and the popular Briggs & Stratton 206. A wide variety of chassis components for the many brands in the sport are available through PKT, including hubs, pedal risers, skid plates, and other hardware for your kart. Axle straightening, chassis adjustments, engine service, and specific CNC machining projects are available through their Motor City headquarters. To learn more about the many products and services available from Precision Karting Technologies, head to pktaxles.com. In racing, experience is priceless. Franklin Motorsports is a leader in the karting industry, and with over 30 years of combined karting experience, we can provide you with everything you need to go racing. With a large online product selection, select track support events, and a wide variety of shop services, Franklin Motorsports is your complete karting source. Check out our online store at franklinkart.com, where all of our products are just a mouse click away. We continue to add to our growing product selection on the online store, and we ship daily to ensure products get to you quickly. We specialize in IAMI engines, tilt seats, the ceramic product line, driveline branded products, Briggs & Stratton engines, smoker performance sprockets, OTK products, AIM, MG tires, and of course, the championship winning Merlin chassis. In our online store, you'll find a variety of items to fill your karting needs. Franklin Motorsports is also known for our wide variety of services and is home to Innovative Engine Works by FMS, our in-house engine service department. Frame straightening, cart prep, and dyno testing are all services offered regularly at Franklin Motorsports. Be sure to stop by the Franklin Trailer during the United States Pro Kart Series events as the official trackside vendor. For all things karting, visit franklinkart.com.
Back at it for the Masters segment of this edition of the Debrief as we're wrapping things up from the Challenge of the Americas finale in Sonoma. Again, our race report brought to you by Margay Racing. 100cc Masters presented by Ruthless Karting. And here's the headline. Cook claims title as Welch and Jones earn victories.
Yeah, essentially this was a two-driver fight for the win in both days as Daniel Jones and Greg Welch were kind of the class of the field, kind of setting the pace both in the wet and in the dry. Daniel Jones taking the local knowledge to earn fast time in the wet session for qualifying with a 103.345. But Greg Welch was able to secure the top spot in the pre-final, essentially using that to go wire to wire in the main event. But that was not without challenge as Daniel Jones was on his bumper the entire time in the main event, which was under wet conditions as well. Welch just kind of kept the cart where he needed it to be to keep Jones from making a move, because Jones looked so many different times, especially on that last lap going into the last corner. I think Jones actually got alongside of him through the kink as they did an over under through what is that turn 10, the right hander.
Yep.
And got side by side through the kink. And then and Welch just kind of put his cart where he needed to in the last corner, essentially coming out with the lead. And then Jones just came up 42,000 short at the line from grabbing the victory from Welch. So it was Welch first, Jones on the Ron White Racing CRG second, and Matthew Ostigai picking up another podium with a third place finish.
Yeah, that was a fifth straight podium for Ostigai. And you mentioned two-driver battle. It was a two-driver battle really for the race win all weekend, as you said, between Welch and Jones. And of course, the two-driver battle in the championship between Matthew Ostigai and Casey Cook. Ostigai ends up on the podium, as you had said, his fifth straight podium of the year. Didn't get the win yet, though. So that's what he was looking for on Sunday. Cook ends up in the fourth spot. So very tight between the two drivers still looking for the championship. And then Fred Clark on a CRG rounded out the top five. When we rolled into Sunday, obviously, you know, Ostigai and Cook know what they're focused on. Ostigai really wanted the win, but his consistency was big in terms of trying to win this championship. But in the end, again, coming out of the gates, it was Jones, David, who was the quickest. He set a 103.3 in the wet, 55.833 in the dry.
Yeah, and then Greg came back on the Pantano to win the pre-final ahead of Jones. And then starting the main event, Matthew Ostigai just put it all out on the table, essentially went after these two guys early on and got into the lead. I believe it was on lap three, got into the tic-tac-toe section, and then all of a sudden began slowing as he made his way through the final portion of the lap or the circuit. Or that section of the track,
turn four and five,
losing his chain off the drive chain or drive gear, and essentially ending his chances at a possible championship, depending on how the results played out. So, a tough end for Ostigai, who, as you said, five straight podiums, had the ability to maybe challenge these guys for the win early on, and losing a chain, losing it all essentially in that corner.
Yeah, I think we all talk about the fact that if you're in karting, you've lost a chain, you know the feeling, right? You know that feeling when it just comes off, the engine RPM spikes, and you're like, no, you can't believe it. And he just cruised off the side of the track. As the track kind of doubles back there, you can go off of turn five and straight through. And he just came to a stop, put the head on the steering wheel, then she got out and was sitting on the on the hill outside the racetrack there, just obviously dejected. But it's still, like you said, it was still up to Casey Cook for getting a result he needed. And indeed, Casey actually stepped things up, David, and rolled in it. As we know, Welch and Jones, you know, they were battling for the lead out front, but Casey Cook came to be part of the fight before it was all said and done.
Yeah, he was able to take advantage of their fighting and actually post fast lap of the race, lap 13, as he was trying to reel them in. So set up for the long run, and it seemed to work out as he was able to catch the top two drivers as they went back and forth. Ended up being a last lap battle between all three drivers. Jones made the over under through turn one as Welch went defensive into turn one. Jones got alongside of him, took over the lead, heading into tic-tac-toe. And then I believe Welch tried to move on Jones as they were at the bottom of that section. And Jones kind of shut the door down. That kind of slowed the momentum for Welch, which allowed Casey Cook to get the momentum and get alongside of him going into the next corner, which would be turn six. And then from there, that put Jones in the lead, Cook into second, and Welch into third. And that's how they would cross the line. So Jones picking up the big first victory at the challenge under Ron White Racing CRG. I can never say that fast. And it was, as we said, Cook at the line in second, but unfortunately a full pushback bumper penalty put him down to the fourth spot, taking him off the podium, moving Welch up into the second, and then Fred Clark on the CRG into the third spot.
Yeah, I'll give a shout out to Clark. He was about, whatever the penalty was, Cook was just enough to move Cook back to fourth. He didn't have quite enough of a gap on Clark to hold the spot.
0.04 of a second.
There you go. But listen, I'm going to give a prop to Fred Clark because he turned things up in a big way. He had good speed on Saturday, but he dialed himself up on Sunday and was right there. So shout out to Fred Clark for a great run to P3. Casey Cook coming home in fourth, as you said. Jeff Rice finishing in the fifth spot on the Praga. In the end, Casey Cook does win the championship by 35 points over Matthew Ostaguy, who did not make it to the end, as we know. And Greg Welch, despite missing one of the weekends and having a technical DQ that he couldn't drop after a win in race one, ends up finishing in third, 40 points back.
Yeah, electing to run that senior race on, I believe it was T2 on Sunday.
Yep.
And so, yeah, it could have been a little bit different had he been able to, you know, improve, you know, have a better finish in one in that round, or again, a win on Sunday could have helped him as well too. But still, good to see Casey Cook pick up the championship, a former staff member with the challenge. Yeah. So that's, you know, he's part of the family. So everybody was happy to see him win. But again, heartbreaking for Ostaguy, who had the opportunity to possibly steal that away. And unfortunately, a chain took that from him.
Yeah, let's go to Master Shifter now, presented by Ron White Racing. headline. O'Neill wins duel as Grossenbacher wins the war.
Did you stumble it like I did?
No, I said it perfectly.
Well, I know because you're the master at this. I'm not. I can write it. I can write it out well better than you can.
You can.
Yeah. This was essentially a two driver fight all weekend long as well. Too Grossenbacher coming in with essentially the title just in his hands, not quite there yet, but had to get through the opening round and did so, but did it with a fight. He set fast time in qualifying of 58.216 in wet weather conditions. But as we talked about, this was the category where the weather conditions changed. And Patrick O'Neill, the local driver on the CRG, was the only one who went out on dry tires for the pre-final. And he was able to navigate the opening laps without any issues. And as soon as the tires warmed up, got up to temperature, he began knifing his way up through the field.
Yeah, he was gone.
And was gone. Exactly. So drove away to the pre-final victory. The only driver to pull off that racetrack, off the racetrack, and we'll talk about this a little more, was Rob Kozakowski. Only made a couple laps before realizing, this is going to tear up my rain tires. I might want to save these. So we'll get into that a little bit later. But then the track conditions changed once again to wet, and O'Neill again, just a little bit better than Bud Grossenbacher was, in the main event. They went back and forth a number of times, but O'Neill was able to secure the victory, over Grossenbacher, picking up his first win on the season.
Yeah, it was a good battle between those guys back and forth, and Grossenbacher only needed the one, you know, solid result to lock down the championship. So he did that on Saturday. But you mentioned Kozakowski, who saved those reins, because obviously, as we talked about O'Neill being so good in the dry, the most of the track was dry and good enough for the slicks. It was tough for him coming through tic-tac-toe in that pre-final. He had to kind of really kind of tiptoe through there and then was able to, you know, smoke everybody everywhere else. Kozakowski says, nope, I'm going to take care of my reins. And in the end, David, he ends up finishing in third. I think he got the fast lap of the race as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Fast lap of the race of 58.970. So almost 0.3 of a lap quicker than O'Neill or Grossenbacher.
Yeah, ends up with in third on the podium. Marcin Kloda was fourth and Samuel Gluss rounding out the top five in that one. On Sunday, coming in with the championship pretty much locked and loaded. Grossenbacher, though, David, a perfect day for him. Wins qualifying, tops in the pre-final as well, and end up getting the victory by 4.2 seconds over O'Neill on championship Sunday.
Yeah, championship was in hand, needed to avoid any technical disqualification, and did so, pulling off a sweep. O'Neill pressured early, but Grossenbacher just too strong in the end. As you said, over a four-second victory. Marcin Kolada picking up a podium finish in the third spot, so two CRGs on the podium once again. Kozakowski and Michael Faker, that was a good battle.
Oh yeah,
on track, because it had a little bit of championship
implications
with both of them racing for the second spot in the standings. Faker made probably 8 different attempts at a move on Kozakowski, but just couldn't hold it. It would either drive off a little too far, drop a wheel or something like that, and Kozakowski was able to hold on to the fourth position in the end. And that put him second in the championship, back by 123 points, while Michael Faker ended up in the third spot, 141 points off of Grossenbacher.
All right, folks, let's wrap this one up here. We take this final break of this edition of the Debrief. We'll come back. We'll have a look at the wrap-up. We'll look at the Constructors' Championship as well. We'll cap it all off, as we always do, with the EKN Trackside Live Race Calendar. All over the karting world, everyone knows OTK is the gold standard for quality and performance. In the U.S., OTK USA is the source for all things OTK. From the legendary Tony Kart brand to the race-winning Cosmic and Esprit chassis, and now the new Red Speed and EOS brands, OTK quality is second to none. All five brands are winning races and championships across the country in national programs like the Ruck Cup USA Florida Winter Tour and the Challenge of the Americas, the SCUSA Pro Tour and Winter Series, and the Pro Kart Challenge, the United States Pro Kart Series, and the WKA Manufacturers Cup. And OTK products are also front and center on the podium of club and regional races from coast to coast. To learn more about a specific product line, you can find the OTK USA dealer near you, whether it's Tony Kart, Cosmic, Esprit, Red Speed, or EOS, visit www.otkusa.com. Specific chassis territories are still available, so kart shops interested in adding a winning component to their product lineups can contact OTK USA directly. Motor mounts. They keep your engine attached to your chassis, right? The answer is, they're much more important than that. Your motor mount is critical in transferring 100% of the power from your engine through to your tires and the racetrack. You need this to get on the podium each and every time you race. Odenthal Racing Products is here for you, providing the best motor mounts on the karting market today. All designed to make sure you're using all the horsepower you pay for. Odenthal Racing Products is a family-owned and operated business with decades of karting experience in providing products with unmatched quality and value for our racing community. The Pro Series mount for two-cycle engines, which is available in 0, 5, and 8-degree inclinations, provides a rigid structure to help keep vibration to a minimum without adding too much weight to your setup. The 4-cycle Easy Set system is one of the most popular mounts for the Briggs & Stratton 206 power plant. Multiple mounting holes provide the most adjustability depending on your chassis and seat placement. To ensure a tight fit to your chassis, our ORP wedge clamps get the job done, and they feature a number of design updates to provide a lower profile and lighter weight. The clamps are available from 28mm to 32mm in both standard and Euro-style sizes. And now, Odenthal has also revolutionized the karting industry with its new EasyGP camera mounting system. Designed to mount anywhere on your chassis,
With one or two cameras, the ORP EZGP camera mount is your solution to capture that onboard winning moment. Head to odenthalracing.com and find a dealer near you. Odenthal Racing Products, proudly made in the USA. Winning takes top quality equipment, flawless preparation, experienced coaching, and passion. And at Team GFC, we live our passion. Developed by American karting champion Gary Carlton, the GFC chassis has become one of the newest brands to reach the top of the podium in North America. GFC has garnered victories and championships at all levels of the sport since its debut at the end of 2018. Shifter car drivers are at the front of the field in the GT14 frame, with the SS31 a consistent contender in tag and 100cc competition. Team GFC has arrive and drive packages available for all categories, including the mini and micro classes utilizing the GFC RR5 cadet chassis. These young pilots have the opportunity to be part of the Team GFC Young Driver Development Program. Learn from one of the best American karters with 28 years racing at the highest levels in the sport, offering personalized training on and off the track. Follow GFC Karting on Facebook and Instagram, or click over to gfckarting.com to learn more about joining Team GFC. GFC, live your passion.
Time to wrap up this edition of The Debrief. Again, episode number 129 as we cap things off. The official cap to the Challenge of the Americas for 2024. Look forward to 2025 from here. Let's wrap things up here, David. The bottom line is, I think the biggest story, I think, in terms of momentum for the series was a record-setting 100cc senior field. Super impressive. 42 drivers on track at Sonoma, and to watch them all roll past start finish turn one, you know, they're still coming through turn one when they're already down to tic-tac-toe. That's what we like to see. The West Coast needs a strong series. Everybody knows East Coast is rocking and rolling right now. There's tons of big series, but there's lots of people who can't travel across the country at the start of the season. That's why the Challenge of the Americas is so important, and that's why the 100cc field at 42 is a big story.
Yeah, it was huge. You know, if we can get a lot of the California drivers that were there to travel to all the events, I think, like you said, 56 drivers competed in this class over the three events. If we can get, you know, all of them there at every round, it's going to be pretty phenomenal. We might even have to start doing heat flights and everything like that. That would be pretty solid to see. And then that'll help add to the junior, you know, when juniors start moving up, it'll probably add to it. And again, the cadets growing as well too, having its biggest field at Sonoma as well. So again, there's a lot of positives. Again, we just got to keep getting everybody on the same page and getting them to the challenge to experience the fun and the excitement that it is.
Yes, that's it. And I had said before, one of the big stories, I didn't even think about it when I wrapped up the broadcast as I normally do on a Sunday, but no red flags at all on the weekend. Very clean racing. I thought the racing was really good. There was some bumping and banging. You're going to get a bit of that, but so the Sonoma track just leads to a lot of great passing. You got to open up a lot of the corners, right? You got to be wide coming in to get a good run off, and that just really allows guys to make that move to the inside. So it was, and then because when that happens, you get lots of over unders. So it was just really good racing, I thought, and I think no red flags was a testament to the drivers that are there.
Yeah, safe weekend. Even, you know, as we said, having the 42 drivers, we didn't see very many incidents, if at all. A couple, you know, here and there, depending on, you know, kind of more towards the back of the field. So again, a safe weekend. And I think that's one of the things that Andy Saisman really wants to emphasize is you know, the safety of the event. And like you said, you know, not a lot of penalties. You know, we did see a lot in the junior race. I think just because of the conditions. Again, yeah. You have a lot of drivers trying to navigate the wet track on dry tires, so it made for a little bit of a challenging race. But again, nothing was dangerous about it. Just some contact as people going for the same piece of real estate. But all in all, a safe weekend in Sonoma.
And all, you know, not surprisingly, one of the conversations we had throughout the weekend was, you know, what's in store for 2025? What's the thought? You know, I think coming into the year here, we all looked and said, hey, you know, we're going to get 120, 130, 140 for the challenge this year. It's had great momentum. It's had great growth over the last couple of years, you know, slow, small, significant growth every year. But man, still with the state of karting in California, Arizona, you know, we didn't get as many people coming down from the Pacific Northwest, I think, as we had hoped for. There was a couple of teams from Canada that we expected that didn't show for the series. So, you know, what is in store, David, for 2025?
We don't know yet. You know, nothing officially has been said. I have my ideas on what should be done. Obviously, I think the biggest question mark is K1 will be ready. You know, that was obviously kind of the hit in terms of the challenge for 2024, because it was set up to go to K1 and hit that Southern California area. Because again, it just seems like a lot of those drivers aren't traveling as much as we've seen in the past. And we always had that Cal speed bump every time we went to Southern California. So maybe, you know, again, we got, you know, probably 10 months, you know, less than that to get it confirmed. But, you know, hopefully there's, you know, a positive moving in Winchester, California for the K1 circuit. And hopefully that'll be ready and that'll be part of the challenge. I think Tucson twice, I think that kind of, you know, that certainly hurt and it showed in the numbers.
Well, David, that's the key. You talk about it. There are a lot of racers in Southern California. If you have a race in their backyard, one of them, then they're only traveling twice. Right. And remember, when they make the haul to Tucson, it's 2 hours farther than Phoenix. So it's a 7 hour, 8 hour drive, whatever it ends up being. And then, of course, then
Sean Beer will tell you.
He could tell you exactly. Sean drives to the races. But again, right, it's having that one close one. So it's only two more. Like, yeah, we'll drive up to Northern California. We love Sonoma. Yeah, we'll go for one race in Arizona. When you have that one base race, I think you're right. If it's, we're going to look at that, man. The key could be, hey, do we get a chance to go to K1 in 2025, right?
Yeah. And again, it depends on, you know, we're seeing a lot of schedules getting put out already for 2025. We're hearing, you know, there's going to be more coming out here in the next couple of weeks for 2025. So I think that'll help Andy, you know, situation of where do I race? When do I race kind of scenario? Because maybe this isn't going to be a winter program. Maybe it's going to be a little bit more spread out.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? Again, I think the good thing is with it being an independent program, he has the opportunity to do whatever he wants with it. True. And so I think the options for 2025 are kind of endless. He could do a lot of different things with the challenge, but I think as long as you keep those core race teams involved with it, you know, you got Nash, you have Precision, you have Forward Direction Motorsports, Ron White Racing, you have
GFC,
of course. Yeah.
West Coast Karting, West Coast Motorsports,
Ruthless Karting. You know, you have a lot of those, you know, Arizona, California, Colorado based operations. We're kind of missing the Pacific Northwest. We're not getting a lot of them. Maybe what will entice Italian Motors to come and follow the challenge all three weekends, something like that. So, and there's a lot of race teams and racers up in the Pacific Northwest that haven't been coming down, you know, both American USA drivers and Canadian drivers. So there's a lot, the opportunities and options are endless, I think, for the challenge. So I think he's kind of, you know, Andy's kind of in a good spot where he can kind of sit back, get some conversations going and see what options are preferred or more liked than what some other options could be.
Yeah, I like it. Let's move now into the Constructors' Championship as we wrap up this edition of the Debrief. Seven different brands winning over the 12 races. David, let's run through. Pretty big weekend for GFC with five wins to lead the way.
Yeah, big weekend for them. Again, we figured we'd see, you know, a shifter cart win for them, and they were able to get two with Kyle Wick winning both junior main events as well, and then one of the senior races. So a good solid end to the challenge weekend or season for them. CRG picking up two victories as well. So great to see Ron White Racing and CRG brand on top of the podium. And then we have five different chassis with a victory as well. TB Kart, EOS, Pantano, Parolin, and Nitro Kart. So a good diverse range for the different constructors in the championship.
All right, let's wrap it up with the EK and Trackside Live race calendar presented today by the Rawlison Performance Group. At the Rawlison Performance Group, we strive for ultimate success. We're more than just an arrive and drive race team with countless wins on the national and regional level. Our focus is on complete driver development, and that's where the success is fueled. We combine one-on-one coaching, on-track instruction, and intensive data debriefing with unparalleled kart and engine prep. our program will help you raise your game. We'll take you to the next level. If that's your goal, RPG needs to be your next move. Experience the Rawlison difference. All right, David, let's have a look at trackside events. I'm not going to be back at a karting event until the Summer Nationals, actually, at Newcastle Motorsports Park. So you are rolling out representing EKN, starting with the May 17th, 18th, 19th event, essentially a month from now. The USPKS back in action at Trackhouse Motorplex with the Carolina Grand Prix.
Yeah, excited to get back to the unofficial home of the United States Pro Kart Series. That is Trackhouse Motorplex. So it'll be hosting the program for a 12th time, which today on the EKN Radio Network, you can actually hear the inaugural USPKS program weekend on the EKN Radio Network right now. So it'll be the second event of the series, which we just were at Speed Sports Racing Park for the opening round. So been talking with Tim Coyne. They're getting pretty amped up about heading back to Mooresville, North Carolina and Race City, USA. Again, one of my favorite places to watch a race. And again, a very competitive circuit to compete at. So we're going to probably see a lot of different races coming down to the wire at that race.
Yeah, after that, another month down the line, middle of June, June 14th to 16th, will be trackside at the Supercarts USA Pro Tour Spring Nationals. That will be their Scusa Pro Tour's first trip to the Motorsports Country Club of Cincinnati in Batavia, Ohio. You'll be there for that one as well, David. I think, not sure where I am that weekend. Something with the USF Pro Championships. I think I may be at VIR that weekend with USF Juniors. But back for another Spring Nationals. Of course, the Scusa Pro Tour getting underway with the Winter Nationals. Some pretty solid racing there. And back at it at MCC.
Correct. You will be at VIR for the USF Juniors program. It'll be my first road trip. Be driving down to Batavia, Ohio. Get to see the Bailiff family facility once again. Got to go there for the first time last year for USPKS. So it'll be exciting to see the Scusa Pro Tour going to a new facility in the MCC Kartplex. It'd be interesting to see how the weekend, I know the Bailiff family is working on some things to accommodate for Supercarts USA, including, you know, a different, media room possibly, right next to the tower and some other things. I know the pro show, they've been talking about how to implement the hot pit. So that's something we'll have to kind of wait and see, what they're going to do with that. But again, the second edition of the pro show going to be happening at Motorsports Country Club of Cincinnati, and the rounds 3 and 4 for the other semi-pro categories as well. So should be a fun, hopefully not humid weekend because Father's Day weekend in Ohio can be a pretty hot one. And as we would typically be at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course for the road racing program, which is just up the road. So if you don't see any coverage Saturday morning, I might be in Mansfield, Ohio.
I like it. Another feather in the cap, of course, for the Motorsports Country Club of Cincinnati and the Bailiff family. That track has become now one of the hot tracks in the sport, which is great. Beautiful facility. I got to get myself down there as well soon. I have not yet been there, so that's going to be a trek for me. But again, yeah, Supercarts USA Pro Tour coming to MCC for the first time here in 2024. That does wrap things up for this edition of The Debrief. Another fantastic season of Challenge of the Americas Racing done and dusted at Sonoma Raceway Karting Center. Always good to be there. Great to spend time with the Challenge family and the FTK Promotions crew. Did a great job, as they always do. But again, that wraps things up. The Debrief is done. Thank you so much, folks, for tuning in. Certainly appreciate it. On behalf of David Cole, my name's Rob Howden. Bye for now.